Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Beth Shapiro, Executive Director of City Meals on Wheels. And under her leadership, City Meals on Wheels has launched really cool initiatives like Chefs Deliver, which takes some of the city's best chefs out of their kitchens to deliver restaurant-quality meals to their frail, aged neighbors.
You got it.
Got it. Following Hurricane Sandy, she began a strategic budgeting process to enhance the organization's readiness for emergencies. She also spearheaded efforts to help hundreds of recipients access SNAP benefits. Prior to joining City Meals, Shapiro worked as a marketing and advertising executive. Beth.
Hello.
Welcome to Hungry Society.
Thank you for having me.
And to Roberta's. I heard you had some good pizza.
Yeah, we had to have a little bit of pizza before the interview. How can you come out here and not?
So I'm really happy to have you here today because City Meals on Wheels is such a great program that I think a lot of food people in New York really respect, and it does such important work. Can we start with you talking about kind of the mission behind the organization?
Sure. City Meals on Wheels was founded almost 37 years ago. Within our roots or within the food world, Gail Green, a pretty well-known restaurant critic, and James Beard had read an article in the New York Times about homebound elderly New Yorkers going up to 4 days without food. It was in advance of Thanksgiving, where city offices close, right, for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Thanksgiving. And in Gail's words, she was living a life of delicious excess, read the article, felt terrible, hopped on the phone, made sort of a round robin of phone calls, and raised $35,000. And that was the intention, to raise some money, and the next holiday was Christmas, we would feed people, or they would feed people. And they called the city, which operated the Meals on Wheels program, and said they were doing this. And really, what grew from that is this organization that recognizes the importance of homebound elderly New Yorkers and the ability, or maybe lack of ability, of city funding to feed them every day of the year. So the city funds meals Monday through Friday as long as there's no holiday. City Meals on Wheels provides weekend, holiday, and emergency meals to 18,000 homebound elderly New Yorkers, now delivering 2 million meals a year to make sure these people have food every day of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to bring that up. 2 million meals. That's a like staggering amount of food and delivery to New Yorkers that need it. But I mean, you guys also do other programming. Can you talk about some of the other things that City Meals on Wheels does?
Sure. So the core of our program are weekend meals, holiday meals, and emergency meals. Sort of as we reach into this hurricane season, I can't not think about emergency meals and our response. The sixth anniversary of Hurricane Sandy is coming up. And in the days before and days after Hurricane Sandy, we did 64,000 emergency meals, galvanized over 800 volunteers to help us. And those volunteers become critical during emergencies, but throughout the year, we leverage volunteers to deliver meals, but also connect with homebound elderly in different ways, whether it's a friendly visiting program where we pair a meal recipient with a volunteer and they agree to meet for at least an hour a week, really helps with social isolation, which is a significant issue for homebound elderly. When you're alone in your apartment, the majority of our meal recipients live alone, that connectivity is vital. Mm-hmm. So we've leveraged volunteers for that. And we've reached into the restaurant and chef world to leverage a different kind of volunteer with our chef friend. Since we were born there following Hurricane Sandy, our board co-president, Danielle Ballud, along with longtime board member, Chef Charlie Palmer, started a program called Chefs Deliver. And it was initiated by them cooking during the hurricane. Following the hurricane, Danielle had all of his restaurants cook and the chefs go out and deliver meals in areas that were hit by the hurricane. And a year later, we did it and brought in other chefs. And from that has grown a monthly program where chefs around the city, typically one chef a month, is cooking meals. They go out to different neighborhoods around the city. The chef gets out and delivers. And it really is an extension of what they do and a reminder of, you know, most chefs are cooking because they love it, right? And they love feeding people and sharing who they are through food. And this gives them a way to see how they help us in other ways and why they help us in other ways throughout the year. So that firsthand impact of delivering a meal and a really special meal for someone. I mean, our food is good, but it's not Danielle or Charlie right. Palmer's food on a regular basis. So it's a real treat for our meal recipients and a way to continue to build our culinary circle of friends and supporters who help through events throughout the year. But this is, I think, a stronger connection to our mission and to what we do with
them. It's like a way to harness the like amazing culinary capital that New York City has. Like all these chefs that are here, why not, you know, bring them into the fold with such a great organization and have them use their skills to make people feel less alone, to create that connection.
Exactly. I was on a delivery once with a chef who participates in one of our events or had for a few years, and we went out on a delivery before the event. And I'm really sorry to say, on the way there, I said something about, are you excited? Are you ready for the event? And he's like, yeah, I'm ready. You know I have to do it. I know it's the right thing. And I thought, oh my God, I better change what we're doing. This
yeah,
is
you're
bad.
Like, okay, great.
Great. Terrific. But we then went on a delivery, and in between like our first and second meal recipient, I was walking with him a couple blocks, and he said, I take back what I said. I get it. I really understand now. This is incredible. So it harnesses, as you said, this greatness of the chef community, but also helps them understand and relate to what we do and to the people that they're helping us nourish.
And like in a restaurant setting, they don't typically get to have that sort of connection and feel like they're actually like helping, which is kind of weird to say, but you know what I mean?
I do. I mean, even in a restaurant setting, and if chefs come out and greet people, it's not a strong or a large amount of time,
right?
To understand who these people are, where any one of their guests inside the restaurant has a different life in their own apartments, whether they're, you know, everyday New Yorkers who can care for themselves versus our meal recipients who can no longer shop or cook for themselves. Their lives are quite different. But giving them that glimpse is, of course, heartwarming, but also puts purpose to what we do and to what we ask them to help us with.
Right. So I feel like the organization, like just looking over some of the facts that you were kind enough to send over beforehand, I didn't realize how many New Yorkers are homebound and, you know, in the older age population, I didn't realize how many. And you start to think about the challenges that would come with that. Can you speak to some of those unique challenges that those New Yorkers face?
Sure. I say this all the time, that we're supporting the people who built this city for us. And I believe that wholeheartedly. The people we're feeding are everyday New Yorkers who had productive lives, mostly long lives. They are teachers and lawyers and nurses, every field that you could think of. And they have lived to the point where they can no longer shop or cook for themselves, whether it's heart disease, diabetes, whatever their illness is. They're still able to stay at home and maintain their privacy and entity in that way, but they don't have the wherewithal to shop or cook for themselves. Some of that is complicated by changing neighborhoods and gentrification around them, where there might have been a corner market that they could get to, they can no longer get to it. Or if they can, they're using an assistive device, a wheelchair, a walker, so they can't carry more than a bag, a light bag, up. They live in every neighborhood you can think of, in elevator buildings, but so many in walk-ups, where if you think about, I get tired going on meal deliveries when I'm walking up three flights, five flights. They often can't even make it out. There, Stanley, who lived on 10th Avenue in Hell's Kitchen, one of our meal recipients, who I came to visit on many occasions because he was just adorable and I liked him, and it was nice to go see him. But he was on a fifth floor walk-up. He'd raised a family there. He was into his 90s. And I'd be huffing and puffing. And by the time I got upstairs and he's like, you got to know how to do it. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Every landing, you have to stop and say a poem or sing a song. And he was right. It was like this moment to catch your breath and then keep going. But, you know, he lived in his apartment most of his life. And the neighborhood changed around him. He could no longer get out on his own to care for himself. But a meal coming to the door kept him safe and comfortable. It's the meal, it's the nutrition, but it's also the delivery, right? So it's a live person knocking on your door, checking on you. You know, they're not there. A regular deliverer's not there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but they are there enough to establish a relationship and to know when something's wrong or different with someone, or they need extra help. They need to change it. I've been asked to change a light bulb. Mm. Simple things that you don't think about, but when you're 80, 90, your balance is going, even before that often. And there are things that you used to take for granted that you just can't anymore, that aren't safe for you to do. The average age of our meal recipient is 83, but we're feeding over 200 people who are 100 years old or older. Wow. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of growth in that old because we're all healthier and living longer, but people haven't planned for that longer life, right? So we've outlived our savings as well as our capability to care for ourselves, and it's a little help. We'll have a meal coming to the door that keeps people in their homes and neighborhoods where they want to be.
Mm. So two things. One, that poem or song advice is great. I might use that on the subway.
You should.
People might get mad as they walk by me, but that's fine. And two, the gentrifying neighborhoods part, that is something I didn't consider, like how your food access choices change. Without your control, they just kind of change around you because of the neighborhood changing and how that would impact what you can cook for yourself, what you can get for yourself if your mobility is becoming an issue.
Right. Even the two pieces of that, right? So things maybe aren't where they were, right? They're not as close. A market may be gone because there's a larger market 10 blocks away, but 10 blocks away makes a difference. Or the types of food in the neighborhood shift because the population is shifting. So someone who was in a traditionally Jewish neighborhood with kosher food isn't anymore, and there's no access to kosher food, or the high rate of the Asian population growth in East Harlem, where that food isn't easily acceptable, or food that they would want to be eating, or are comfortable and traditionally have eaten, may not be accessible. So there, you know, a couple of aspects to that. And also with gentrification, pricing is going up. You know, you look here or Williamsburg, where 10 years ago was a very different scene than it is now.
Hmm. So one of my favorite initiatives of City Meals on Wheels is the cards on holiday. I think that's so sweet and something that could be like so easily like taken for granted. For someone who's homebound, it's such a sweet like gesture. Can you talk about that program a little bit?
Yes. It started with school children actually wanting to get involved with City Meals, so they started by decorating holiday cards, mostly around traditional holidays, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, etc. And it's grown to, you name a holiday, and we have cards for it, including birthday cards, anniversaries, just change of seasons. So there's always a little nice touch going out with the meal. And you think it's a nice gesture. And then it's confirmed when you go on a meal delivery and you see these cards on someone's fridge. And it's like, oh, it's so nice. Or you go on a meal delivery with children and they've brought what they've decorated. And then you go again and you see it. Actually, I've seen it on front doors. So it really is just a reminder and a thank you to these people that we're thinking about them, we're caring, and want them to know that they are still thought of.
Yeah. How did you come to work with City Meals on Wheels?
I was very lucky. It was looking to leave the for-profit world and had quite a few people actually not even talk to me because I didn't have nonprofit experience.
Wow.
And I was lucky. Marcia Stein, the founding executive director of City Meals, was looking for a director of marketing and communications and was willing to take a chance on this other woman who had no nonprofit experience but had marketing experience. And I started a little over 12 years ago. It is probably the most stressful job I've ever had and by far the most rewarding. And the stress really is, you know, mostly self-inflicted around making sure that we raise enough money to feed people. But the transition from for-profit to non-profit was, it made sense to me. City Meals has always been run like a business and looked at that way. And it was not so difficult a transition. And I do think I was lucky that someone was willing to take a chance. And then again, to parlay that when Marcia retired after 30 years and I was interviewed and got the job as executive director, I couldn't have a better job.
So you also have some fun stuff coming up this month and next month. Do you want to talk about that?
We always have fun stuff coming up. It's exciting. So right now we're in September, so Sweet September. There are, I don't know, over 40 restaurants, bake shops, markets around the city that are designating a percentage of a particular item to be donated to City Meals. It's an initiative we launched just a few years ago, and it is very sweet. And it gets fun and fattening because I try to support as the list
is
growing.
You have to taste it, right?
You have to taste it. You have to buy a little to bring into the office to share.
Right.
Look, we're bringing pizza back after this today.
Right.
So we have to bring desserts back. So it's been bad for the waistline, but great for City Meals and great, again, to connect with the outside world. We have a truffle event in October, which is mostly around our friends and young professionals, but a lovely tasting event that Charlie Palmer is cooking at. We have our Power Lunch for Women in November, which is one of our large signature events, an invitation-only event for about 300, 350 women, leaders of business, the arts, et cetera. And men can come too, but their tickets are a minimum of $10,000 each. So, but with 300-400 people in the room, we typically raise over $1 million. And
wow.
I think that really speaks to the commitment of New Yorkers to City Meals. And actually, it's going to be a great year. Our MC is Jane Krakowski. So I think it will be
that
fun.
That sounds like fun, yeah.
Yeah, it does. And a little bit moving and a lot of fun. So, but we have sort of delicious events all year round, which is great.
So how else can listeners get involved? How can they help out?
citymeals.org. If you visit our website, I mean, I have to say that donations are the best thing we can get. And unique to City Meals, 100% of all donations from the general public go to meal preparation and delivery.
Yeah.
We cover our administrative costs from donations from our board and a little bit from the city. And you can also look to volunteer for numerous volunteer opportunities on the site, as well as participation in events and other things happening.
Excellent. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more with Beth Shapiro of City Meals on Wheels.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com. The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate: an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
All right, so we are back with Beth Shapiro of City Meals on Wheels. So now the second half of the show is where we get a bit more personal.
Uh-oh.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina.
Okay, where in North Carolina?
In Charlotte. My parents are from Brooklyn, but I lived in North Carolina from the time I was 4 until 21. I graduated college, sold my car, and moved to New York with $500 in my pocket.
Wow. That's the start of a memoir if I ever heard one.
It took a while.
So did you have any like early dining traditions with your family? Was there a certain place you went all the time?
So, oh my God, Sunday night was Chinese. Both my parents worked, so we actually ate out a lot. I don't know if I would say fine dining. I know my dad would not eat pizza in North Carolina because he grew up in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And North Carolina pizza was not Brooklyn pizza. I shouldn't say this, but like for a while it was like Pizza Hut and Shakey's. I don't know if that even exists anymore.
What is Shakey's?
It was a pizza place.
Oh, Shakey's is a pizza place. Okay.
So it was interesting because I had, you know, Brooklyn-born parents that we weren't doing barbecue at home. We certainly were out, and I love barbecue now. I still love Chinese food. And when I moved to New York, my first splurge was actually New York Magazine, and I would get it to read Gail's reviews and dream about these restaurants to one day go to, which took a really long time to get to, but it you know, all came full circle coming to City Meals. So yeah. I would say yes, I eat way too much, but I'm lucky. I don't cook dinner nearly as much as I should, but I love to cook. I find it incredibly relaxing. I don't know that I'm a good cook, but I enjoy it. But I love eating out.
So I feel like you've seen the dining scene change a lot probably since you moved here. What are some of the like changes in the New York City dining scene you've seen?
Wow. I am far from an expert, but I also think that City Meals, our big tasting event at Rock Center, seems to be typically ahead of the curve slightly. I think it's been 10 years since we did Street and Savory, an event with food trucks, way ahead of their time.
Wow.
But even that, right? When I first came to New York, it was pretzels and hot dogs on the street, where now you can get anything. I mean, particularly certain areas of the city. So like Park Avenue in the 50s, and then again, low 50s on 6th Avenue, from lobster rolls to great pizza to, you know, typical halal and dogs. I think that's great. And really the access to everything delicious, low end to high end. I don't know if there's any, I haven't been everywhere in the world, but I don't know if there's any place in the world that has as much variety of food in both types and flavors and price point.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to a fairly inexpensive French bakery or a very expensive French restaurant. So I think access maybe is a key point in change, which obviously has come with TV and social media.
The explosion of like interest in food,
right,
period.
Right.
Do you have a favorite restaurant at the moment?
Oh, that's sort of not fair because in my head, all our board members and friends.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You don't want to alienate anyone. Where's the last place you went out to eat? We'll do that. That's a little safer.
The last place I went out to eat shouldn't be so difficult. Oh, yes. My parents just celebrated my mom's 83rd birthday and my parents' 60th anniversary.
Wow.
So we were at Cafe Bellou, but down in Palm Beach for an unbelievable meal down there, which was just delicious and fun. We had a really good time. Yeah. And then I just had pizza here.
Oh, yeah. You just ate in the restaurant. But I'm sure that was like big splurge meal. That's like, I mean, 60th wedding anniversary and 80th birthday, you have to go all out.
It was pretty good. I think we must have had, and it was just a really small group, but we must have had two or three desserts for every person at the table.
I mean, that's how you do it. That's how you end it out.
Yeah, exactly. Why not?
So from that great experience to what was one of your worst restaurant experiences ever?
Oh, no. Worst restaurant. For me, I would say mostly around service. I have found lately that service is great until the end of a meal, and all of a sudden you can't find the person to settle up. None of our board members, that's not an issue. None of our friends. But like odd places, you'll be like, all right, ready to go. And that's annoying. Oh, I had a great meal. I was just out of the country in San Miguel in the Azores Islands.
Oh, wow.
Off of Portugal. Not related to New York, sorry. But there's a husband and wife who own a farm. And for 12 years, they dreamed about opening a restaurant to use their excess food.
Wow.
And it's 9 tables, 6 courses, all from their farm or friends. Like there was fish they don't have themselves, so from a friend. It was 35 euros. It was nothing. It was so homey and nice. Like you feel like you're sitting in their living room having this beautiful meal.
Mm. Do you remember some of the dishes that you had?
I do. There was a carrot soup. Just the water itself was infused with fennel, mint, and lemon basil, which I've been trying to mimic at home since I've been back.
Have you gotten it?
Not perfectly. And I can't figure out if I'm supposed to steep it first, but then it turns brown, and this was just this pale green. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to finesse that.
How to figure it out.
No, I have to figure it out. There was a hamachi. There was an eggplant dish. Not really a Parmesan, but it had fresh tomatoes on it as well. A beautiful trout. Mm. And dessert was a berry sorbet that was out of this world.
What was the restaurant called?
Oh,
or the farm?
See?
Called? Do you not want to share? Are you trying to keep it to yourself?
I don't remember. I have it in my phone. I don't want to keep it to myself because it was so good. And you have to call and it's complicated. I should get back to you because it was good and I don't know.
Yes, please send me that.
I will.
Yeah.
I will. It's worth the trip.
My husband really wants to go to the Azores. So
it's great. I will send it to you.
Yes, please. And Beth, my last question for you. If you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who is invited?
That is so not fair. It would be, actually, I'd love to have it at home, but with chefs there cooking. So who would I have? I would have Danielle and Charlie Palmer. I would have Mark Forgione because I think he's also super fun. And who would I have? I would have family and friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can also have like historical figures, people not living anymore.
I'd have Marilyn Monroe.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I would. I think that would be very cool. And I'd have my grandparents. My grandparents all passed away when I was a teenager, like all around 14 years old. And I think my perspective now, A, as an adult, but B, in the position that I'm in, to be able to talk to them in a different way and learn from them, such deep respect for what my grandparents went through in their lives and what they became and came to this country to do and survived is so consistent and or reminiscent of our meal recipients that to be able to thank them from an adult perspective at a glorious meal would be very cool.
Mm. What are you drinking?
A lot of wine. And honestly, a lot of water.
A lot of water. Is there any particular wine that has to be on the table?
No.
Just any wine?
No.
Everyone bring some wine.
Everyone brings some wine. I would invite our board co-president, Bob Grimes, who has quite the wine house, actually.
Nice.
He would be in charge of wine.
Excellent. That sounds fun. I might pop in.
You're welcome to.
You know, I don't know.
All fun people.
Yeah. I have to meet Marilyn Monroe.
Why not?
Beth, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Korsha. It was fun.
And I have to give a very, very special shout out to David Tadashore, who is leaving Heritage Radio. This is his last week, and he's engineered so many of these shows. And I just want to thank him on the air.
Oh, shucks. Because
that's the sound of David. He's done so many of the shows behind the scenes, you know, edited out things I've said wrong, crazy things I've said. So I just want to say thank you. And thank you for listening to A Hungry Society. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.